Hello and welcome to another Linguistics Career Cast, the podcast devoted to exploring careers for linguists outside academia. I'm your host, Laurel Sutton. Erin Kuester has a master's degree in applied linguistics from Ohio University and is a copywriter and content creator for service businesses, as well as being a writing mentor and editor. She is also an experienced instructional designer. She is very active on Instagram and TikTok and at her own website. Topics discussed include instructional design, tech writing, content creation, career coaching, TikTok, Gen AI, book talk, and copywriting. Links to Erin's LinkedIn, website, and social media accounts are in the show notes. Erin, thank you so much for coming to talk with me today. I'm so pleased. As I was saying just before we started recording, I was really impressed with the talk that you had given at LCL 24, going over all these different kinds of content creations that people might want to look into as a career. And I don't think we've had anybody on who does that specifically. So I really want to hear about your career and all the different pivots that you've had. Careers aren't straight lines. They're very windy. So I'm really interested to hear about your windy journey to where you are.
Yeah, I'm so excited. People had so much fun in the content creation workshop, and I had so much fun giving it. And I also am just chronically online. So I love talking about TikTok and Instagram and content creation. It's just one of my hobbies and things that I think is really fun.
Oh, it's great. And just as an aside, before we jump into your career, I noticed there are a lot more linguists making content now, not people who call themselves linguists because they speak more than one language, but people who are actually linguists and who are, delivering the real actual information on language. And I think it's great because people consume so many different types of media. And even though people might be writing great articles or great books, if there isn't this similar kind of content in a video format or a TikTok format, it's just not getting out to, the youth, because that's all they consume, really.
Yeah, you got to meet people where they're at. And if people are on TikTok, you got to be on TikTok.
Exactly. So let's start at the beginning. The first thing I want to know is, how did you find out what linguistics was and get interested and decide that this is what you wanted to study?
I always tell people that I got into linguistics on accident. I never meant to study linguistics. Mm-hmm. I was always just so interested in culture. So my bachelor's degree is in cultural anthropology. Mm-hmm. I love learning about culture. I loved working with people from around the world. And after my bachelor's degree, I actually got started immediately teaching university level English as a second language. And so from there, I realized if I wanted to do that, I think I was an adjunct at the time. I was an adjunct teaching two or three courses a semester. And they were to hire you full time, you need to have the master's degree in linguistics. And I was I guess I got to go get my master's degree in linguistics so I can teach full time instead of adjuncting. And so I just did that.
And, as we all know in the social sciences, anthropology and linguistics have an awful lot of overlap. So it's not like you were jumping from anthropology to, biology or chemistry or something like that. Did you find a lot of interesting areas of intersection between anthropology and linguistics as you were getting your master's?
Yeah, of course. There's always overlap between anthropology and linguistics. And I always tell people that I was actually less interested in the language part of linguistics and more interested in the teaching part. Mm-hmm. So teaching was really my passion, and linguistics, teaching English to international students, just happened to be where my teaching expertise lay. Mm-hmm. And so it was really that connection with people from around the world and teaching them English and teaching them culture and things like that. That was kind of what I resonated with the most. I liked linguistic theory a lot less than practical application of linguistics in the classroom.
Yeah, no, understood. What sorts of things did you specifically gravitate towards as you were doing your master's?
Ooh, I really love, well, unsurprising, I've already talked about TikTok, but I loved learning about internet language and internet culture and how internet culture can affect language usage or vice versa, like basically how people use linguistics online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super interesting. When I was doing my PhD program 7,000 years ago, one of the papers that I had written was about the use of language in then, the only way that you could communicate was Usenet forums. And it was just beginning to be a thing. And we called it computer mediated communication. And it was like you, I was so fascinated with it because it was taking language and putting it in a whole new context. Like people had never really communicated this way before. And on the Usenet forums, you were like in real time sort of communicating with people from everywhere and you didn't really know who they were. It was just like, oh my God, all this data. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I really wish TikTok had been around when I was doing my master's because I 100% would have written papers on TikTok language. Because I just think it's so fascinating how people have like this internet shorthand that we've kind of created and how internet has and social media has like shaped our language over like the past decade.
Yeah. And that it's changing so fast too, right? Like because social media is just ubiquitous and it's happening all the time. The way words come and go and the way the shape of language changes, it seems like it's at this incredibly accelerated pace that was not even thought of, you know, 20 or 30 years ago.
Yes. And I feel like I finally now like reached that age where I can't keep up with what the kids are saying. The way that I used to make fun of my parents for not understanding what I was saying. But I've gotten to that like sort of linguistic overload point where I'm like, well, I don't know what the kids are saying these days.
Yeah, same.
So you can only take in so much.
This is true. So you did your master's program and then you were continuing to teach, correct?
Yeah. So after my master's program, I taught for another like 6 years or so. So altogether, I did about 10 years of teaching in higher education. And that ended at COVID. It feels like a really like hard, like stopping point for me is like COVID started. I stopped teaching and I transitioned into like my current sort of job area of expertise. And it was a really interesting and weird transition point. Cause I'd been kind of burning out on teaching for the previous like 2 years. So maybe around 2018, I was like, I want to be done teaching. I'm really tired of being in the classroom every day. It was just kind of getting mentally exhausting. And so in the back of my mind, I was like, I got to start figuring out what to do next. So I started researching. I'm like, what do people do? I had wanted to stay in higher education, but I didn't know what I wanted to do next. And then COVID happened. They sent everyone home. And I was like, I cannot continue teaching from my laptop in my dining room. I was like, it's time. It's time. I have to figure out what's next.
Yeah. Your inciting incident. I just want to go back for a second. I see from your experience that you've listed, one of the things you were teaching, you were an instructional designer. Can you explain what that actually means?
Yeah. So instructional designers, well, it sort of depends if you're talking about higher education or like an industry.
Talk about the difference between them, please. That'd be great.
So you're basically creating learning experiences for usually adults. There are some instructional designers who work with like children, but it's mostly with adults. In higher education, instructional designers tend to work on like online courses. So if you've ever taken like an online course with a university, they usually work in tandem with the professors of the course to kind of do that tech side of online teaching. So if you're a professor in higher education, like obviously online teaching isn't your area of expertise. Your area of expertise is going to be linguistics or chemistry or economics or whatever. So instructional designers help those professors to create their online learning experiences. Versus in industry, which is where I currently work as an instructional designer, we're usually creating trainings either for customers on how to use a product or a service. Or creating internal trainings for employees on like how to upskill or how to complete a certain process or things like that.
Okay.
So it's creating different kinds of trainings and learning experiences.
Okay. And it sounds like maybe for the industry side, part of it is also writing copy or documentation to go with it. Is that right?
Yeah, tons of writing. So I've worked in instructional design, both in higher education and in industry. In higher education, it was a lot of tech stuff that I was doing, mostly building online courses.
Mm-hmm.
Versus in industry, I'm the one doing all of the writing. I'm doing all of the scaffolding of the course. I usually confer with a subject matter expert, but I'm the one who's the expert in education and helping people learn things.
I'm thinking about how linguistics plays into that. Do you feel like there were certain aspects of your linguistic training that really help you out here or really prepared you for being able to do this?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things is that callback to culture. So the company that I work for is a software company, and it's an international company. We have offices all around the world. We have global employees and global customers. So when we approach designing a training, we use global by design. And so that is trying to make sure that our trainings are region agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
And I use a lot of my teaching experience with different cultures mm-hmm. and my linguistics experience to make sure that the learning experiences and the trainings I create are accessible to customers all over the world. So they're not overly focused on the North American experience. They're not overly focused on our Australian customers. And so that's been really helpful in kind of understanding without any training, the different cultures exist and you have to write accessibly so that everyone can understand the training.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you work with other linguists or are you the only one?
I'm the only linguist. I work with a bunch of other instructional designers, but a lot of them have backgrounds in K-12 education, which is sort of the, I guess, normal. I'm using air quotes around normal. That's the normal path to instructional design is through K-12 education. We've got a lot of other instructional designers who come from a variety of backgrounds, but I am the only linguist that I know of.
Do you think that makes you, I don't want to say better, but just you bring a different skill set than the people who have more of a traditional background in instruction?
Definitely. I think one of the areas that I'm particularly good at is writing. I think that's one of my strongest suits as an instructional designer. Just because I have that background in academia, I have had to write papers, I've written publications, I've written learning activities that have been published in books. And so I just have such a strong writing background. And I actually didn't understand that I was a good writer until I left academia. And I was in that first instructional design job, and my manager told me, you're a really good writer. I think I had her look over something, something I was writing, and she's like, I have no notes. This is incredible. You're such a good writer.
Amazing.
I was like, oh, I never thought about that. I just assumed everyone was a good writer because I worked in academia for 10 years. So,
Oh, that's amazing. That's so cool. It is amazing that I think academia or being in linguistics especially gives you a lot of transferable skills that you don't really think about. I always like to say that, when I was in grad school, I was a TA and, we had bigger, smaller classes, but it was teaching like you did, right? And then when I got into the business world, I found that when I was running a meeting, it was just the same, right? You've got a bunch of people around a table and you have to keep their attention and you have to keep them focused on what you're doing and deal with people who might not want to be there. And that was not a transferable skill that I thought I would ever use or need, but it came in extremely handy. It's never clear what is going to be part of your experience that you will then transfer to your new job.
Yeah. And I think a lot of other linguists, especially those who have the background in teaching like I do, don't understand how much of teaching is a transferable skill because they're it's just teaching. I just go into the classroom. I just lesson plan. And I'm like, there's no just. That's a lot of that's a lot of work, and all of it is transferable. You just have to find a way to figure out how to explain that if you're looking for other jobs, because most other jobs don't understand what you do as an instructor or as a linguist. So you have to figure out how to tell people, like, I have all these transferable skills. I'm incredible at teaching. I'm incredible at writing. And some of that, though, you don't realize until after you've left academia.
Yeah. I am so glad that you said that thing about the word just. That's definitely one of my pet peeves, shall we say, when people talk about their experience as a linguist and they say, well, I just did this or I just did that. And I want us to ban that word when we're talking about our own experiences and accomplishments, because I think it's part of the academic mindset, right? That you just downplay the things that you've done because we're sort of conditioned to think, well, it's never really good enough, right? It's just a thing that I did. Yeah, I just ran an experiment where I took, you know, gigabytes of data and analyzed it. No big deal. Like, no, it is a big deal. You should be really proud of that. So thank you for pointing that out.
I agree. Let's just ban the word just in that context.
Love it. That's great. Okay. But, part of what you have done besides the instructional design, you are a content creator. So how did that happen? And how did you start making content?
Same thing as linguistics, honestly. I just kind of stumbled into it on accident. Gosh, I feel like most of my career has been on accident at this point.
Oh, that's normal, right? I mean, that's kind of life, is stuff just happens and you got to roll with it.
Yeah, exactly. I just rolled with it. I'm like, well, you know, I'm enjoying this, so I'll keep doing it. I got into content creation mostly because of my experience with leaving academia. So the process for leaving like education and getting a like non-education, non-academia job is really difficult. And it's only gotten more difficult since I left in 2020. And after getting a job as an instructional designer, I had so many people asking me, like, well, how did you do that? What was your resume like? Like, what are interviews like? What kind of questions do they ask you in non-academic interviews, or like, what other job options are out there? And I'm like, oh, people are really hungry for this knowledge. It was especially like K-12 educators who wanted to know more about like getting out of the classroom and getting an industry job. And so I just started making content around my experience leaving academia, going through the interview process with like non-academic jobs, what it was like writing a resume. And so that's just how I got started. I started on LinkedIn. I started answering people's questions. I would start posting about like my experience or what I've learned from other people's experiences. Then I started posting on TikTok, the same kind of content. And that all kind of developed into like a little mini like career coaching business that I started around 2021, kind of like after I'd been out of academia for a while. So a lot of my content focused on educators wanting to leave the classroom and that career transition and what it looks like to get out of academia.
That's so cool. So you mentioned LinkedIn, you mentioned TikTok. Do you have your own blog at your own website where you post content as well?
I do have a blog on my website. It's a little abandoned at the moment. I've been neglecting it a bit just because I've been writing content for other people as part of my current business. But for anyone who does want to create content, blogs are a great way to do that because they're sort of evergreen. They're always present versus like TikTok and LinkedIn are more prone to trending content, which doesn't necessarily last a long time.
Yeah. One of the things that I have been telling people in a very similar vein to what you've been saying. So people have come to me to say, like, how do I get into marketing? It's like, well, one of the things that employers will want to know is, what have you done? And if you haven't really done much, it's difficult, right? Like, you have to have the experience to get the job, but the job wants you to be experienced, and it can go around like that. But I have advised people to do just what you said, like start your own blog somewhere where you can write, and then you have examples and you can point people there and say, hey, I've written 25 articles about these different topics, and they can go and then they'll get a feel for what kind of writer you are and what your attitude is and see, you know, your amazing command of the English language. So do you think that that's still a valid piece of advice to give to people? Like, just start your own blog and start writing so you can point to something.
Yeah, absolutely. And like whatever that kind of version looks like for the industry you want to go into. I love when people have passion projects that they submit as part of their like interview process. You know, employers might ask for a portfolio and people are like, you know, I don't have experience. I don't have any of this. So I always encourage people to have a passion project that they've kind of developed. My example for instructional design is that usually for instructional design, they want to see some kind of portfolio of learning experiences you've created. And so people will create kind of like faux trainings or faux classes just for the portfolio. And they're always so boring because they're about like the same old business topics over and over again. But I've seen people create learning experiences on their passion projects, like how to repot a plant or how to create a D&D character.
Oh, wow.
Or how to, like different yoga poses or like how to do a yoga sequence. So when you're creating that content as like an example that you want to use for your job or for applying to jobs, make sure it's something that you're actually interested in and passionate about. Because people can tell when you're passionate about something versus when you've created like fake examples just to create them.
Wow, that's so interesting. I would never have thought of that. That's amazing. I think as an employer myself and having hired people, one of the things that we always look for when we're talking to folks that we might want to bring on board is, like, what do you do outside of work, right? Show us that you are actually a well-rounded person and you have interests and passions and things like that. And sometimes that can really make the difference for people who might have similar qualifications. And I think that's another place where people do the just, you know, like they'll say in my spare time, like I'm just a, I don't know, a baker or something. Like, well, it's just a hobby. It's like, yeah, I bake all this stuff and I distribute it. And it's like, no, actually, that's really interesting. Right.
Yeah.
It shows what a well-rounded person you are.
Yeah. People always have these like interesting like hobbies or passions. And I'm like, I want to see more of that in your like career materials, because that's interesting. Like that's fun. If I'm looking at 100 applications for instructional designer position and your application has like a D&D portfolio, I'm going to look at that.
Yeah. I hate to keep coming back to it, but I think it's the academic mindset that kind of drills that out of you, that this stuff isn't really important, right? What's really important is your number of papers that you've published and all the conferences that you've went to. And it's kind of not like that in industry. People are actually really genuinely interested in your life outside of your little business area.
Yeah, I think academia sort of like crushes the fun out of your job. I was lucky in that I still got to infuse a lot of fun into my job because I worked with like international students. And so we did like a lot of fun outings and activities. Like we didn't have to be as serious as, you know, like if you're teaching like in a linguistics PhD or something. But yeah, academia is just so serious all the time versus industry is so unserious. Like my job right now is so chill and so fun and like it's almost relaxing.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so cool. I am really interested to hear if you can talk a little bit more about the TikTok thing. I know that there's a way to do it and do it correctly. And you've been doing it for a long time and you have like dozens and dozens and dozens of videos. So in the talk that you gave at LCL, you did go into that a little bit, but for people who might not have been there or listened to it, can you just explain a little bit how it works?
Yeah. You mean like how, like kind of how I've used TikTok?
Yeah, how you use TikTok. And if there's somebody listening who's like, I want to do a TikTok channel and talk about, you know, I don't know, Old Norse language or something. How do I do it?
I mean, I just kind of jumped in. Like, I just jumped in and made a video. So the first thing I would tell people if they're interested in creating TikToks or making TikTok content is to just start.
Okay.
A lot of TikTok is experimenting to see what works for you and your platform, because everyone's TikTok is going to be different. It depends on like what your like area of interest is, what your audience wants from you. So for most of my TikTok, I was making like career coaching content.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've switched. I mostly just do book and reading content because I do content for fun now instead of for business. So it's just kind of important to know that your TikTok is going to evolve with you and your interests. It will never be the same like week to week or month to month. But then also it's important to explore the TikToks of other people that you're interested in and not necessarily copy their style, but to see what kind of format do they use? What kind of hooks do they use in their content? So I would say that it is important to consume TikTok content just as much as it is for you to make content. Because you have to kind of understand how it works at the same time that you're making the content. This makes it sound super serious, but it's really just fun. Like, you jump in, you make content, you kind of learn how it works as you go. You learn about visual hooks, you learn about adding captions, you add about like editing video, you learn about like trending sounds and things like that.
Do you also do YouTube videos or do you just do TikTok videos?
I have a YouTube where I just repost my TikTok videos. So I don't create specifically for YouTube. I don't know a ton about YouTube content creation.
It seems like from what I've seen, like I am definitely not as into TikTok, but I do watch a lot of YouTube, that the linguists that I've seen who create some content like that guy, Jackson Crawford, right? He does Old Norse, and that's why I was thinking about him. So he makes longer form videos on YouTube, and then he has snippets that he posts on TikTok. So that shows, I think, the difference in what people expect, right? That on YouTube, if you wanted to make something that was a little bit longer and more involved, that's a more appropriate place, where on TikTok, people are used to the short hits, right? That might have highlights or something, but that might encourage somebody to go to a different place, whether it's a YouTube or whether it's a blog or something that you've written, you know, that they're not all mutually exclusive, that they can all feed into each other to make this sort of ecosystem of content.
Oh yeah, that's super important, is understanding what the purpose of each platform is. So like you said, YouTube is definitely long form content. Like if I'm sitting down to a YouTube video, I want it to be like an hour long. Like I'm in for the long haul. I want to watch something. Versus on TikTok, the attention span on TikTok, I think, is like 3 seconds. So you have to, you got to front load your most important content in the first 3 seconds and then hope people stay around for the rest of the video. But yeah, TikTok is definitely like snippets of information versus YouTube. But they do work in tandem. Like you said, lots of people create long form YouTube content and then post like the YouTube highlights to TikTok to get people interested in their content. That's a pretty common like ecosystem that creators have.
Yeah. And then on top of it, there are podcasts as well. So yet another media format that people can access in a different way, right? So one of the things that we do as part of the Linguistics Career Launch is we recorded all those talks, like your talk, and we put them on YouTube so people can watch them. But then we've taken the audio and put them on here on the CareerCast for people who don't want to sit, right? You can, like, your talk had some visuals, but generally the advice that you gave was pretty understandable if you were just listening to the audio part of it, because some people don't want to sit and watch a video. They just want to hear the audio part. So there is, I think, a lot of repurposing of content depending on what channel you are putting it through.
Yes. And that also kind of pulls me back into like learning design. It reminds me of like the universal design for learning, in which best practices for learning are to have like various different inputs so that people can choose what works for them when they want to learn something. So if you want to go to YouTube and learn something, you can. If you want to go to podcasts and learn that, that works too. Or TikTok, like it's helpful for content creators to have like a creation ecosystem, but then it's also helpful for their audience so that they can consume their content in the way that works the best for them.
Yeah, cool. That's really good. I think people are kind of not used to viewing the 20,000 foot view of all these different channels. And if you like one channel, like if you're really into TikTok, you might not think about the others. I'm speaking like for people who want to create stuff. It's good to try to create as much different stuff as you can and see where it hits. Or as you were saying, you know, what the purpose of each one of those things is. It doesn't, you don't have to be TikTok exclusive, right? You can do TikTok and you can do YouTube and you can do podcasts. You can just use all the channels that are available to help get your information out.
Yeah. And it depends on what your purpose is for creating content. If you're just mm-hmm. making like entertainment content, or you just want to get some ideas out there, it's best to start with one mm-hmm. platform and then move on to others. But then if you get super serious and you're using content creation for business, or if you want to make money off of it, then you have to understand like how different platforms monetize mm-hmm. your content. And so that's a whole other level that is one of the reasons why creators have like a whole ecosystem of content mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. different platforms monetize differently and have different like funding sources available. So yeah. if you ever do get into making money from your content, you do have to look at like how all those work together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you do now. So you're a full-time copywriter pretty much. Is that correct?
So I have two full-time jobs.
Oh, okay.
My full-time like corporate like instructional design job, which I love. Like I said earlier, it's a very chill, relaxing job. I love it so much. I won't ever leave because it's remote. I work from home. It's very I've gotten so lucky with that job. But I am someone who like is constantly doing stuff. Like I like to be busy all the time. And mm-hmm. so a couple of years ago, right after I left my teaching job, I started doing freelance writing just for fun on the side. I was like, oh, I'll make a little bit of extra money doing freelance writing. And actually, I got my first freelance writing job from Linguistics Career Launch through networking.
Okay.
And since then, I've kind of been building like a freelance writing business on like my free time, which has sort of morphed over time into a copywriting and content writing business.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, what kind of copywriting are you doing? Like, is it for print? Is it, you know, I mean, there is still print that does exist, but like, what are you doing? What kind of assignments do you get?
Yeah, I actually had a client just inquire about print copy. So there is still print copy. They wanted, like billboard advertising copy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I may move forward with that. I'm not sure. I mostly do website copywriting, so full mm-hmm. websites. I also do a lot of like website audits. So I will look at someone's website if they've done their own copy, and I'll go in and fix it. Mm-hmm. I'll fix their language. I'll kind of develop their brand voice. I'll do like SEO keyword research for them. And then I also do content writing. Like blog posts, educational posts, mm-hmm. some email marketing. So I do a little bit of everything when it comes to writing.
Mm-hmm. And just winding it back a little bit for people who might be interested in doing that, were you able to get that kind of work based on the instructional design that you had done? Or was it just like, I'm interested in doing copywriting and having a few examples and then trying to get some clients that way?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember how I even mm-hmm. landed on copywriting. It mostly started with the freelance writing on the side. Mm-hmm. Once I kind of had that discovery of like, oh, I am a good writer. I can do this and people mm-hmm. will pay me for my writing. My first freelance writing gig was actually writing grammar content, ESL grammar content for Mango Languages. And so if you go to their website, you can see my grammar content that I've written. And so from there, I just started kind of like hunting down clients and offering writing services. And from then I was like, you know, I need to learn more about like small business and how that works. And then I did research on marketing and I was like, I think I'm doing copywriting. I think that's what this is. Mm-hmm. So then I kind of like went all in on learning about how copywriting works and sales psychology, and the language background really, really has helped with the copywriting. Most copywriters have a marketing background, but for me, I've really been leaning on like understanding language and understanding how messaging works and understanding like accessibility in language. So it's definitely the linguistics that has kind of helped me sort of launch that writing career.
As you're talking about it, in almost academic terms, it's like doing copywriting was a research project for you, right? Like you went out there and you got the information and you pulled it all together and you found out what you didn't know so that you could learn those things and then you could be really prepared. And, you know, that's kind of the job of a freelancer, right? It's like you want to do a thing, but you got to find out about it first. And as former academics, all of us with our degrees, we're really good at that, right?
Like
doing the research, getting the data, finding out stuff.
Yeah, research plays a really big part into what I do as a freelance writer, whether it's content writing or copywriting. And I tell people, like, if I don't know something, like, about your business, I will find it out. Like, I will research. So I think people also don't understand academia, how much research is a skill in order to, like, find information and then use information the way you want to. Like, that's a skill that most people don't have.
Yep. And doing the linguistics degree absolutely prepares you for it because it's all research. One of the other things that occurs to me as you were talking, the other thing that I think linguistics in particular can bring to the kind of work that you're talking about, and I've done a little bit of it too, is just the skill in organizing information. So the times that I've had to do like some copywriting or informational architectures for clients, all of that stuff is linguistics, right? It's how you make a taxonomy. It's how you sort things into piles. Mm-hmm. It's how you take this information and decide where it's going to go. You have to have an organization. You can't just start writing, right? You need to decide, where does it belong? What am I trying to communicate? How does it work with these other areas of information? And linguistics is just paramount for that, right? That's all we do as grad students, is just like finding information and organizing it. And it kind of, I think it's one of those just things again, where you're like, well, you know, I just did taxonomies. It's like, most people can't do that kind of stuff. And they look at you like, how do you have this skill? Like, well, that's all I had to do when I was a grad student, was make taxonomies.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap between linguistics and copywriting. Thinking about like website hierarchy is something that came very naturally to me. Like understanding what order information needs to be presented in, and then even the coding, I guess, like the HTML coding of the website, understanding like the hierarchy of information and how it needs to be tagged in order to be searchable and accessible. I learned all that in academia.
And linguistics specifically. I am wondering, as you're talking, and whatever your thoughts are on this, you know, everyone's talking about AI, and I know that people are saying they can use things like Gen AI to do some of the work that you're doing, some of the work that I've been doing, like creative stuff, coming up with copy or, you know, in my case, naming things and stuff. What are your feelings on that? Like, as an ex-academic who does a lot of research, have you done research into this? Like, what do you think's going on?
Oh, I've done so much research into AI, because it always comes up when I talk with clients who want to know if I'm using AI in my writing, because they're like, why am I going to pay a copywriter to write my website if you're just going to use AI? And so I don't use AI. I've experimented with it. Sometimes it's fun for like brainstorming ideas. But all of my like content is human written. But so I've had to do a lot of research so that I can answer their questions. So I've done research into like the AI detectors, the different AI like models that they have. And I mean, ultimately, I think AI can't do what a copywriter does or a content writer. They can, but it's going to be bad. Like, I've seen AI generated websites, and I've been hired by clients specifically to fix AI generated websites. Or they've worked with another freelancer who clearly used AI to write their website. And then they contact me and they're like, I need you to fix this. It sounds like AI. Like, it's obvious that this is AI.
Mm-hmm.
So AI can do like the basics, but it can't do creativity. Mm-hmm. And when you're in copywriting, a big important thing is like having a personal, like a brand voice, having a messaging, like a messaging system, understanding who your clients are, understanding what their pain points are. And AI just can't do that.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. I am wondering if that's, this is a period we're in right now where people like you who do professional copywriting, what you're going to be doing for the next couple of years is just fixing all these really bad examples until people get tired of it. And they're like, this is stupid. Like, why are we wasting our money having to come in, have someone come in and fix all this? Let's not do that anymore. I hope we reach that point sooner rather than later, honestly.
Absolutely. A lot of what I do is like AI cleanup. And I think people, like when they go to invest in a copywriter, they get a little freaked out by the price. They're like, well, you know, AI could do this. Why am I paying thousands of dollars for a copywriter to do this? And mm-hmm. then they have to come to the copywriter anyway to fix everything mm-hmm. that AI did incorrectly. And AI mm-hmm. is also not reliable. So mm-hmm. it's not going to do research for you, or it will, but it's going to hallucinate things. Like AI is really bad about just like pulling facts out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want like research-backed writing that's going to make your business money, you need like an actual copywriter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. I've been reading Emily Bender's book, The AI Con, and it's so good about that. And it is incredible to me that people have been so eager to buy in to thinking of generative AI as like human level creativity. I don't really understand why it's suddenly people are like, oh yes, it can do anything and it will replace all these jobs. It's like, no, it's not actually. It's just, what do they call it? A text extruding tool. And yeah, that's just exactly what it is. It doesn't think, it can't create, it can't answer things. It can't do any of the things that humans do really.
I mean, I have a theory about why people are like that. It's not a very nice theory. It's a little rude. Basically, the people who are like get so excited about how creative AI is, are people who are not creative in the first place
mm-hmm.
and don't understand. They don't understand the impact of human creativity on everyone's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So all content that we consume, whether it's TikTok content or HBO or your favorite book, like that's all human creativity. And so people who are like, oh my gosh, AI can do this just as well, are people who don't value creativity in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. And I was just reading something the other day about the movie studios and other creative corporations saying that they think the future of entertainment is where you as the viewer get to have input into it and you can change it so that the characters do what you want them to do or have the ending that you want to see. And that's like the opposite of creativity, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, the purpose of creativity is to see things through someone's eyes or to make contact with someone else's thoughts. And that's like what a movie or a book is, right? Somebody creates this thing and you read it and you're like, huh, this is what this other person thinks. You don't have to like it, but it's not you going in and tweaking it every step of the way.
Yeah, it's understanding the human experience through someone else's eyes, which AI will never be the human experience. So,
because right, it's not human. It's just a text extruding tool. It doesn't think about stuff.
Plus you get into all the issues of like AI, like the data sets that they use to create the AI and like the algorithms being like inherently biased against like certain populations and things mm-hmm. like that. Like it's just so fraught with difficulties. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just, at this point, I'm sort of AI neutral. Like I understand why people use it. I don't personally mm-hmm. use it that much. But I don't think it's going to be replacing creative jobs anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. All right. I didn't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but you know, the area that you work in, your space, is one that people keep saying AI is going to be impacting tremendously. Like, oh, we're losing thousands and thousands of jobs. Nobody's going to have to hire a copywriter ever again. And I think that's just garbage.
Yeah. I mean, I think about some of my copywriting inspiration, like for anyone who's watched Mad Men, they're all copywriters mm-hmm. in Mad Men. They're all in marketing and advertising, and thinking about like the creative brainstorms that they did as a team. Like, I don't know. AI is not going to be creating any sort of like incredible, amazing advertising anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally agree. So you're doing instructional design, you're doing copywriting. What else are you doing? You mentioned you do TikToks now for books. What kind of books are you reading and talking about?
Oh, I just do book talk content. So for anyone who is familiar with like TikTok at all, book talk is a huge part of TikTok where people create content based around their favorite books, things that they're mm-hmm. reading. It's really like lighthearted, fun content. And it's just a creative outlet for me at this point. So mm-hmm. I used to use TikTok for career coaching and to, you know, find prospective like clients and things like that. And now I just talk about books. I just read a lot of fiction, a lot of like romance and fantasy and mm-hmm. just fun books.
Well, that sounds good. What's your favorite new book?
My favorite new book is the Dungeon Crawler Carl series.
Oh, I heard about that. Yes. Yeah. Okay, yes.
It's one of those book series that's like gaining very rapidly mm-hmm. in popularity. So most people I talk to haven't heard of it, but I 100% will talk them into reading it because it's my favorite new book series.
The thing that the people that I heard talking about it were saying, it's fun. Like, it's meant to be fun. It's supposed to be fun. And let's just go with it.
It is sort of fun. It starts off really fun. I'd say the first like two or three books are really fun, uh-huh. entertaining, sort of like popcorn books.
Yeah.
And then it gets very deep and very serious.
Ooh, okay.
And you will cry.
Oh, okay.
By the most current books. Like there's 7 books out right now in the series. And by book 6 and 7, like you will be crying over these
amazing.
Characters.
Oh, that's great. Wow. Hey, that's what books should do, right? Make you laugh, make you cry, make you think. That's awesome. That's so cool. And you've talked about these on your TikTok so people can go and see what your thoughts are.
Yes, I make a lot of Dungeon Crawler Carl content, actually. I feel like I'm, like a door-to-door salesman for Dungeon Crawler Carl. Like, my goal is to get people to read it because I love it so much. And none of my like book friends sort of like in real life are into it. So I talk to people on the internet about it.
Okay, cool. I'll put a link in in the show notes in case people want to go and read it where they can go and get them. Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool. So I think lastly, I just wanted to ask you, I think I know the answer. How are you feeling about linguists entering the kind of space that you're in? You know, good career choice, something that people should aspire to do?
Yeah, I think whether you want to do instructional design or like copywriting, content writing, both of those are very easy transitions for linguists. Mm-hmm. And being a linguist has like huge advantages and directly transferable skills to those areas. And you see, I would say you see a lot of things as a linguistic, like as a linguist, you notice a lot of things that other people in those areas don't necessarily notice. Like we talked mm-hmm. about the research, the ability to like teach people. So coming from that linguistics background is such a huge asset in those areas. Mm-hmm. And actually, mm-hmm. now that I'm thinking about it, I had a copywriting client inquire with me specifically because she is an ESL speaker. She learned English as a second language. And she's like, the content you write for your Instagram is so clear and so easy to understand. Like, I want to work with you because you seem to really simplify things. And I was like, yeah, because I spent 10 years simplifying language for my students. Mm-hmm. So like just understanding how language works is a huge advantage in in writing, any kind of writing career.
That's fantastic. I'm so pleased. I was just thinking, on Facebook, we have a Facebook group that's for the Linguistics Beyond Academia group, and we occasionally will post job listings there. And we'd posted one that was a fairly high-level position, but it was essentially like a director of communications for an entity. And a couple of people were responding going, well, you might be a linguist, but what do you know about this? Like, as you just said, people in communications generally have like marketing degrees or something. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of questioning, why would this be appropriate for a linguist? And so we were trying to respond saying all those things that you were just saying, right? You know language, and that's what comms is. It's language.
Yeah.
So
yeah, all of marketing is just messaging. So
it's just messaging.
You understand language.
You know how to do it. Yeah. And if there's stuff that you don't know how to do, you're an expert in doing research. You can find that stuff out. It's not like it's secret, right? It's not like you can't learn some of the things that you need to learn, or, you know, whatever the jargon is for where you are. All of those things are things that you can learn. And because you have gotten a degree, and maybe it's just a bachelor's or a master's or PhD, you're good at ramping up really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you do need to get on board with something that you don't know much about, you're going to be able to do it faster and deeper than most people will, because mm-hmm. that's your job. That's doing research. That's what you can do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking about all of the like onboarding and learning I've had to do in post-academia jobs. And I did those things so quickly that I ended up sort of sitting around and like twiddling my thumbs for a bit. Like when you onboard to a new job, they give you a checklist. And I finished my first month checklist in like the first week of my job. Because I think we're just like prone to researching and digging deep. And like if someone gives you a task to research, like you're going to do it. And so I ended up working way too quickly and learning things way too like fast.
Yep, that is the linguist way. This has been fantastic. I think we've covered all the things that we wanted. I had on a list to talk about. Is it okay if I put your LinkedIn link in the show notes in case people want to contact you for informational interviews or to get some advice about this as a potential career?
Yeah, absolutely. You can include my LinkedIn. I'm not super active on LinkedIn these days. So you can also include my email if people want to email me and ask questions or set something up. I am much more responsive by email these days.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Anything else you want to leave as a parting advice for people who might be interested in it, other than you can do this if you want to?
Yes, you can do this. People are so afraid, I think, out of academia to look for non-academic jobs. They don't really like, I feel like people are really afraid to reach for a job that they actually want. So I would say don't be afraid to apply to those like high-level positions. Like you said, director of comms, director-level positions, like manager. I think people see sometimes the like six-figure salary jobs and like, no, that's not for me. I'm just an academic. So if you see a job that you want, you should go for it because you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, perfect. Great advice. Erin, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I've had so much fun.
Linguistics Career Launch is an ongoing nonprofit project currently led by volunteers that works to educate students, faculty, administrators, and industry employers about the value of linguists in business, government, nonprofit, and tech. The LCL has held two online boot camps during which attendees were able to learn from and interact with career linguists, as well as gain practical experience in career management skills. Videos of all our recorded sessions are available on our YouTube channel. You can get in touch at linguisticscareerlaunch@gmail.com.